Corinthians 26, you have to break your fast between 6:22 a.m. and 10:46 a.m. If you really want to get the benefit of Ibadah fasting on Ibadah, you have to break the fast the following day within that time period. On 28th, we have a special program here, Nrisimha Chaturdashi, appearance day of Lord Nrisimha Dev. Krishna is one of the Krishna's incarnations, a half man and half lion. Why did he take such a form? You come on that day, you will listen to the class and you will know what was the purpose behind Lord Krishna to take that particular form of half man and half lion. The program will start at 5 o'clock. We'll have a fire yajna, fire sacrifice. And at 6 p.m. we have Abhishek. And on that day, the deities will have a flower outfit. So you can actually try to arrange a flower outfit. Anyone who wants to sponsor the flower outfit is $1,500. Anyone who wants to sponsor for that flower outfit for the deities, and the following day they can get the prasad, the deity outfit to them. It will be given to them. And then today's, today we have a special speaker. And I am humbled to actually introduce such a great person. So we have to ask a special person to introduce a special person. So that special person is Damodar Prasad Das. Please come and introduce Manadashi to people.
Hare Krishna. It's my first time I introduce Varas, so I hope I can say something. He asked me if I can give a brief introduction for those of you who don't know him. His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj is grown up in India, in Calcutta, and in a young age he went to Germany to maybe, you know, the city Hamburg, to study chemistry. And while he was in Germany, he came across some Vedic literatures. Probably most of you have heard of the Vedic teachings. And he became interested in learning more about the spiritual teachings. So after 5 years, he went to Germany in 1970. In 1975, he decided to go back to India and learn more about the spiritual teachings. So while he was in India, he was searching for a guru, a teacher, and he came across one book called The Nectar of Devotion, which is one of the books written by Srila Prabhupada. And only after reading this one book, he became surrendered to Krishna. He decided to give his life for the service of Krishna, God. And soon after that, he joined one temple in Mayapur, near Calcutta. And he started to serve there, and then he met Srila Prabhupada. And in the first meeting, Srila Prabhupada actually gave him the task to translate all his English books into Bengali. And also he became the personal assistant of Srila Prabhupada. And in his last year, when Srila Prabhupada was here, he was assisting him in all kind of writing letters and also personal service, like cooking for him, etc. And after Srila Prabhupada left, His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj became a spiritual teacher. He started to travel all over the world and accept. He started to accept disciples all over the world. In the meantime, he opened one temple in Ujjain, India, and he just recently started a project in the further. His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So we are very, very honored that Maharaj is here with us today, and this is valuable time. And speaks about the teachings of Srila Prabhupada.
So I was told that many of you are coming from the university, students, or youngsters, who are... How many of you are coming here for the first time? Oh, wonderful. And this is the first time you're here. And what's your impression?
Full of devotion.
Okay, full of devotion. Wonderful. And yours?
Same, Krishna.
Yeah.
Very beautiful.
Oh,
very beautiful. Oh,
thank
God.
You.
Oh, God.
What's your...
My cup is overflowing with gratitude.
Wonderful. Oh. Thank you.
I've been here before, but it's lovely, radiant.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, do you know what you're doing? What you stand for? In simple words, you can say, in God we trust. Isn't that the principle of the United States? The motto of... Like, I remember when I saw the dollar bill, which was very, I found it very impressive. In God we trust. So that shows that the United States of America is a nation that believes in God. And the question is, yes, we believe in God. We are told to love Him. But who is He? So that is what we are actually cultivating and trying to develop our loving relationship with God. And when you want to know somebody, then there's a way to know. Like, for example, if I want to know you, what would be the best way to know? Either to go to you and ask you, who are you? Or I can ask somebody who knows you to introduce me to you. Right? So, that is the way. Or, if you are a very, very famous person, which you are, then we find some books that speaks about you. So, if we want to know about God, there are ways, these are the ways you get to know. Yes, there are books that speak about God. And there is one book where God Himself speaks about this. And that is Bhagavad Gita. God Himself is speaking about Himself. Like, He comes here to this material nature. He resides in the spiritual world. He is not of this world. Beyond this world, there is another reality. And He resides in that spiritual reality. And He comes here from time to time to remind us about Himself. Remind us about our relationship with Him, and reminds us about how to develop that relationship. And by coming here, He acts in such a way that makes us completely convinced that yes, He is the Supreme. And those activities of the Lord, those inconceivably wonderful activities have been recorded in scriptures. So all the scriptures we find speaks about God. And in the scriptures we find his specific activities, his instructions, and about his identity. Now, if we approach this book, did you ever read this book? How many of you, did any of you read this book by the way? How many of you read this by the way? Very good. Okay, here, Bhagavad, the name of the book itself is revealing who he is or what it is. Bhagavad means by the Lord. The Sanskrit word for God is Bhagavad. And Bhagavad means by the Supreme Lord.
Spoken by Supreme. What means?
Give me a chance to speak. And Gita means song. When he speaks in music, in song. You will notice all these presentations, every single verse in this book is presented in the form of poetry. So his words, we speak in a certain way, but when the Lord speaks, he speaks, it comes out in the form of music. And that means the song by the Supreme Personality of God. So in this, he is actually presenting. Okay, I'll give you the background also, briefly. There was a family feud in the royal family called the Kuru dynasty. In the Kuru dynasty, there were two brothers. The elder brother, generally in the Vedic culture, the eldest brother, eldest son, inherits the father's property. Now, the elder brother of the two was blind, so he couldn't become the king. So the younger brother became the king. But the elder brother, you know, had an intense desire to become the king, and unfortunately he couldn't become the king because he was blind. And he was hoping that at least his son would become the king. But unfortunately, his younger brother gave birth to the son before his wife gave birth to the son. As a result of that, he became the heir to the throne. And then, they grew up, but from their childhood, these two groups of cousins developed animosity. They developed animosity. And this animosity developed into a very bitter conflict. The elder brother's sons, there were 100 brothers, and the younger brother's sons, there were 5 of them. And they had been, from their childhood, they had been persecuted in various ways. Even they were conspired to be burned alive, and so forth. And eventually their kingdom that they had, that they developed themselves, was usurped deceptive game of dice. Anyway, in a cheating way, they took over their kingdom, and they were banished to the forest for 12 years, and for one year they had to remain incognito. And when they came back and claimed their kingdom, the other group refused to give it back to them, which eventually led into a battle. So when the battle was about to begin, it's a famous battle known as the Battle of Kurukshetra. And this is the history that took place 5,000 years ago. So the the third of the five brothers, his name is Arjun, he, when he saw that he has to fight, he had to fight with his relatives and friends, he became overwhelmed with emotion. Here he had to fight with his grandfather, had to fight with his teacher, had to fight with his cousins, friends, uncles. And so he decided not to fight. Now for a warrior to retreat from the battlefield is the most undesirable act. A warrior to be seen as a coward is the most undesirable and most infamous act, most unglorious act. So, now in this battle, Krishna and Arjun, they are actually cousins. Arjun's mother was Krishna's aunt, father's sister. So they're cousins, and they are of the same age. They are very intimate friends. So Krishna decided to become Arjun's charioteer. So when Arjun told Krishna that, "Krishna, I can't fight this battle," and he gave various reasons why he cannot fight this battle, then Krishna started to speak to him. And that is the background of Bhagavad Gita. It's a part of Mahabharata. Mahabharata is actually the history of this world, and Bhagavad Gita is one of the chapters of that epic. And Krishna, when he started to advise Arjuna, the first thing he told Arjuna, "Arjuna, you're speaking like a wise man, but you don't have the knowledge." In this way, he mildly chastised Arjuna. "Arjuna, you're speaking like a wise man, but you don't have the knowledge." Meaning, you don't know, but you are speaking. You don't have the knowledge, but you are speaking. So, and then, why Krishna said that, he is explaining. So that you are lamenting over these personalities, but they all are eternal spiritual being. What you are identifying is their bodies. And this, before that, the other consideration was all kinds of endeavors were made to avoid this battle. It is not that you decided to come to the battle. You have been forced to come into the battle. Every single effort was made to avoid this undesirable battle. But now that you have come to the battlefield, there is no way you should retreat. You have to fight. And you are lamenting over that you have to kill those people, but you are not considering that they themselves decided to come to the battlefield or fight with you. It was their own choice. So if they wanted to come and fight the battle, then in this battle, somebody has to die and somebody has to win. Now you are lamenting over the bodies of these individuals, but their actual identity is not the body. So the first thing that Krishna is pointing out, that our actual identity is not this body. Our actual identity is the soul. And Krishna gives various examples. One beautiful example is the body changes from childhood to youth to old age. But in spite of the change of the bodies, we do not change. 5-year-old I 25 years old I and today's I, although the 5-year-old body of mine, 25-year-old body of mine and today's body of mine are totally different. But in spite of the change of the body, I am the same person. So who is actually me then? Am I this body? No, the body changed. But I didn't change, my identity remained constant. So that I is the spiritual me, the spirit soul, whose presence in this body is making this body alive. Does it make sense, this point? Like, okay, let me ask in a simple way. When you're 5 years old, how was your body? Little? Child's body. Baby's body. Then you grew up, you became, say, 15. Where is the childhood body? It's gone. You're a totally different body. Then you become 25, 35, 45. In time, the body changed. But in spite of the change of the body, are you the same person or not? What will be the answer? What will be your answer to that?
I personally feel that the spirit grows as well. I'm a little confused, to be honest. You don't think that the spirit changes or grows?
I didn't get you.
You don't think the spirit changes or grows?
No. The spirit remains constant.
Okay.
Right? Say, for example, who you are. You see, okay, that leads to another point. Actually,
I'm not the person I was.
No, that's good. That's good. You know, you came up with a very good point. Actually, we have two material bodies, two types of bodies made of matter. One is this gross body, this body. This body is made of 5 gross elements. Solid, liquid, fire, air, and ether. And beyond that, we have another body made of 3 subtle elements. Mind, intelligence, and force. That's also a body. We have another body. Example, when you're awake, our gross body, this body, is awake, and also the subtle body is awake. But when you fall asleep, this gross body is unconscious. That we become unaware of this body. But when you dream, are we present in the dream? The dream, in that, we are in the subtle. That is happening in our subtle body. So yes, our subtle body also changes. The gross body changes, our subtle body changes. Like for example, our mentality changes, our intelligence changes. But our identity remains the same. Me, that I am, remains the same. So, that is, I hope, is it clear now? Like, the soul doesn't change, the subtle body changes, our mentality changes, but that's not the change of the soul. Like, for example, what's your name?
Sam.
5-year-old Sam? 25,
15? Adam.
Adam. Oh, I'm sorry. So, Adam. 5-year-old Adam, 15-year-old Adam, and today's Adam. The same Adam? Is the same identity?
Again, I personally disagree. I'm here to learn and listen. Not
yeah, good. No. Good that you're bringing up this question. Okay. Okay, fine. I'll make another point. Adam, are you married? Are you married?
I'm married.
Are you married?
Not anymore, no.
Not anymore, but
he does.
Okay. Okay, so, okay, let's put it the other way around. To your parents, like 15-year-old Adam and 25-year-old Adam, is the same person, the same son, or different? Are you the son of the same father and mother?
We're just going to go with yes. I don't want to argue with you.
It's a matter of clarification. You know, so as you say, like, you're here to learn something. And I'm trying to enlighten you with this information. Okay. So, okay. Now, Krishna is pointing out that in spite of the change of the body, the person doesn't change. Person remains the same. The identity of the person is the same. Then he is pointing out, just as when this body is like a dress, just as we are wearing this dress, the soul is wearing this body. Just as you drive a machine or a vehicle, the soul is riding this vehicle of this body. And when the vehicle becomes old or dress becomes old, what do? Do you change it? Similarly, when the body becomes old and uninhabitable, the soul leaves the body. And when the soul leaves the body dies. Death is to the body, the death is not to the soul. As long as the soul is in the body is alive. When the soul leaves the body dies. When the soul accepts a new body, that is the birth. The birth is of the body is not of the soul. Rather, it's the acceptance of a new body by the soul. And when the soul leaves the old body, we call it death. So this birth and death is to the body. The soul is eternal. The soul is immortal. The soul is imperishable. So when the soul leaves the body, the soul continues to exist, and the soul accepts another body. That is called the transmigration of the soul. So the first thing that Krishna points out in this Bhagavad Gita, that we all are spiritual beings. We are not a product of this matter, but we came from another reality, the spiritual world. And this spiritual me, spirit soul, is imperishable. No weapon can cut it. No fire can burn it, and it cannot be drowned by air, by water, and it cannot be withered by air. So the soul's identity is eternal and immortal and imperishable. Then Krishna is establishing his identity as the Supreme Soul. The Supreme Soul. And as the Supreme Soul, he is situated in everyone's heart. We are spiritual beings. We are spirit soul, minute, atomic, spiritual particle. And the Lord is present with us in everyone's heart. And he is there in our hearts in order to enable us to develop our loving relationship with him. And that is the ultimate goal of our life. The existence of the part, the utility of the part, lies in its connection to the whole. For example, this finger is a part of my body. As long as this finger is connected to the body, this finger is very important. But when this finger becomes severed from the body, separated from the body, you throw it away. It doesn't have any value. It doesn't have any utility. So similarly, when we remain connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is our origin, who is our source, then our existence becomes meaningful. And when we become separated from him, then our existence is practically meaningful. Being separated from him We are subjected to act in this material nature, and our actions are generating reactions, and we become subjected to those reactions. And this is how we are transmigrating in this material nature from one body to another. But actually our goal is to become free from this material bondage and become connected to that Supreme Personality of God. And the final instruction Krishna gives, that just surrender unto me. Because through your surrender, you become connected to me. And when you become connected to me, there we will develop a loving relationship. And that loving relationship is the source of joy. So in short, this is what this book is saying. Of course, you can see it has a lot more information. What I tried to give is just a synopsis of this book. And so please read it. And if you find that this book is too heavy, too serious, too voluminous, then there are small books also. There's one book which I generally suggest. That's called The Perfect Question, Perfect Answer. There are relevant questions and there are perfect answers to those questions. So, those books that... Do we have perfect question, perfect answer?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, those who came, or those who came, not only those who came for the first time, whoever wants, please take the book. It will be a gift to you from me. So, please read that. It's a beautiful book. And the basis of the book is there was a Peace Corps worker in India. And so he had an encounter with Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, the founder of the movement, whose form you can see in the daughter there. And so he is asking some very, very relevant questions. And Prabhupada is giving the answers. And that actually dispels a lot of doubts. So, you can start off with that one, and if you feel it is, you want to go further, then there are other books, and especially this Bhagavad Gita. So please read them. And please keep coming here. On every Sunday, we have our program. We call it Sunday Love Feast. It's a feast that is a token of our loving exchange. So please come. And so does anybody have any question? Okay.
We have one sponsor who sponsored the feast today.
Yeah.
And this is the book we are giving as a gift. Would you like to autograph it?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so
Mr.
since
Dabatel?
This came up here, this is a book that I wrote. I have the good fortune of being with Srila Prabhupada as his secretary. And I have the good fortune of having some very intimate relationship with him. So this book is actually the records, I can say, the descriptions of those
Gita Patel.
How can we all have
now, material suffering. All the time we are suffering. If we have money, if we have all material substance, but still we are suffering. How can we overcome?
How can we overcome material suffering? Okay. The sufferings are pertaining to this body. Right? And as long as we remain in this bodily consciousness, suffering are inevitable. Through this body we try to enjoy and we make endeavors to enjoy, we get some enjoyment. But in spite of all our endeavors to enjoy, the enjoyment goes and distress comes, suffering. Nobody invites suffering, but it comes in the course of our dealings in this material nature. So all the suffering conditions ultimately is due to our separation from Krishna, due to our losing our spiritual identity and falsely identifying ourselves. Therefore, when you become situated in a spiritual identity, then the suffering, we become free from suffering condition. And the way to become situated in a spiritual identity is by developing our loving relationship with Krishna. So this will be the simple answer, but if you want to go into the details, then we can say that this body is actually meant to receive pain. This body that we all have is meant to receive pain. And this world is a place of suffering. So we are in a place that is meant to suffer, and we are in a body that is meant to receive pain. What can we actually expect? What we are constantly doing is, with our intelligence, we are trying to avoid the suffering condition. There is constant possibilities of suffering, but we try to avoid those suffering conditions by using our intelligence. Now, consider this body. Take any part of this body, no matter how insignificant it is. Say, this yellow. Consider in how many ways you can inflict pain to this yellow. You can take a knife, cut it. You can take a fire, burn it. In so many ways you can inflict pain to this yellow. Now you consider in how many ways you can give pleasure to the world. Now that actually applies to every single part of our body. Now you tell me what this body is meant for. Like every single part, this principle will apply to every single part of the body. We can inflict pain in thousands of ways, but there is hardly any reason to give pleasure. Therefore, the way to come to transcend this body is the only way to become free from the suffering condition. And the way, there is a way to do it. And the simple way to do it is by developing our spiritual identity, by developing our relationship with Krishna. Then our consciousness transcends the bodily platforms and becomes situated in our spiritual identity. Becomes situated in our spiritual consciousness. That's why the process is called the process of Krishna consciousness. Becoming aware of Krishna. Now we are conscious of our bodies. We are the body consciousness. But there is a process by which you can shift this consciousness from this body. Actually, I was expecting a lot more questions.
I have a question.
Yes.
You said Jivatma got separated from Krishna, and that's why they are suffering. So Jivatma, as well as Krishna, they are all unborn, and they have been living forever. There is no time when Jivatma didn't exist, nor Krishna. So at one point in time, Jivatma is not separated from Krishna.
Yes. So what's your question?
This is a question.
What's your question?
What point in time?
What point in time? Okay. Yeah. It has been pointed out. You see, we are conscious beings. We are conscious. But our consciousness is minute. Like it is like a ray of light. Now, to how many points a ray of light can be projected? Only to one point. So this consciousness was meant to be projected to Krishna. But when we shifted our consciousness away from Krishna, then we saw Krishna's inferior energy. This is the material nature. So the fault was Krishna Bodhi in Chaitanya Charitamrita is being described in this way. It's in Bengali. I'm repeating the point in English. Krishna Bodhi Mukhaya Bhagavan Shakari Nikatastha Maya Tarijapotiyata. Mukh means face. Right? So turning one's face away from Krishna, the moment the living entity turns his face away from he is projected to Krishna's inferior material nature. And that causes him this bondage, which is called the bondage of the illusory energy of the Lord. The inferior energy, this material nature, but a living entity is a superior energy of Krishna. We all are coming from Krishna's superior energy. So when we, superior us, perceive the inferior material nature, we developed a tendency to lord over, because it's a natural tendency of the superior to dominate over the inferior. Right? So we projected our, at the moment we projected our consciousness externally, away from Krishna, then immediately we got entangled in the material nature. How? We developed a tendency to lord over. But our actual identity is we are servants of Krishna. But here we are trying to lord over this material nature. So our identity shifts from the servant to becomes the master. But that is a false identity. So that is called the self, the false ego, mistaken identity. False identity. Then we become covered over with intelligence. We become affected by intelligence. This is also material energy actually. And with the intelligence we begin to consider how we are going to enjoy this material nature. And then through the mind our consciousness constantly flows towards this material direction. In this way, through these three subtle elements, false ego, intelligence, and mind, we develop our subtle body. And then according to the shape of our subtle body, material nature provides us with a gross body made of five elements. So this is how we become entangled in the material nature. The point is how and when it happened, the moment we turned our face away from Krishna. Therefore, the way back is to shift our vision, our consciousness back to Krishna. The process of Krishna consciousness.
I understand that, but the point is maybe Krishna's plan that some entity are...
No, this is not Krishna's plan, this is our plan. It's we who decide. Krishna never told you go and you stay with me.
Okay, so Jivatman and Krishna.
Anyway, I think, you know, we can discuss about it later.
I have a question.
Yeah.
In Bhagavad Gita, in 3rd chapter, text 37, Krishna is telling that the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is the lust only Arjuna which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the old devouring sinful enemy of this world. My question is, isn't lust also originates from the mode of ignorance or in mode of goodness?
Yes, yes. But the thing is that, you see, lust means the tendency to enjoy the objects of this material nature. Right? And it happens due to our involvement with this material nature. Not only mode of ignorance, the mode of passion as well. Rajo-esho, Rajo, Kama-esho, Krodha-esho, Rajo, Purnasana, Prabha. So mode of passion. But the mode of goodness actually takes us away from that and motivates us to project towards the spiritual direction. The tendency to enjoy this material nature is developing from the mode of good, mode of passion. Mode of passion and ignorance. Thank you. Yes?
This is maybe just to clarify, if you could help clarify, I think Adam's question about, if you can help me if I
you really don't want to be involved anymore.
And I'm sure that's well, my understanding is that there's a sense that that we do change, that we have the eternal identity of spirit soul, but our sense of self changes according to our mental concepts. As you were saying, the intelligence and the mind, it is affected by different concepts, different associations, different things that we read or hear, people that we associate with. So we see that we may be growing or as a person. But can you explain how that is different from the eternal identity as the soul? I think that's
what it is. Yeah. So just as, you know, the body changes with time, the gross body, the subtle body changes also with time or experience. But the personality remains the same, that's my point. The soul is the personality. You know, like as I was saying, like to the mother, are you the same child? When your mentality changed, your shape changed, your attitude changed. But aren't you the same person? Like, so the personality is the same. Like say, you, that you were 5 years old, 15 years old, and so forth. With that I agree, your mentality also changed. But that is not the real you. That is your mentality, your intelligence. But you, the person, is the same. Thank you. Any other? Yes?
Maharaj, you were talking about the gross and the subtle body, and at the time of death, if we've actually perfected this process and can shed the gross body, how is the subtle body shed so that we can...
Oh, very good. Very good question. Yes. You see, the gross body, we leave the gross body at one point. We leave this body and go away, right, at the time of death. But the subtle body, we do not shed like that. The subtle body remains. And actually the subtle body carries us to our next body, our next destination. And it is according to the subtle body shape that we get our next body. Like, for example, the way we act, every single action leaves its imprint in the subtle body. Or to simplify it, you can say mind. Every action has its effect on the mind. Like when you do something good, how do you feel? Elated? When you do something bad, even though no one saw us doing that, don't you feel guilty or happy? So in this way, every single action actually leaves its impression on the subtle body, and accordingly the subtle body takes its shape. Don't we sometimes say, oh, he's like an angel? Why? Because his activities are like that of an angel. Sometimes we say, oh, he's like an animal, because his activities are like that. So this is how our activities are taking the shape, like somebody who is acting like an angel, he develops an appropriate body like that of an angel, and so forth. And that is how the next body is destined. Like somebody who acted like an angel, developed an angelic body, he gets into an angelic womb and gets an angelic body. So the point is, a subtle body doesn't die even after death. Rather, subtle body carries us to the next destination. But what the subtle body is composed of? Subtle body is composed of?
Mind,
intelligence, and force as well. So when the mind is constantly engaged in remembering Krishna, mind's business is actually to remember. So Krishna is telling in Bhagavad Gita, man mana bhavah, with your mind you constantly think of me. So when the mind is engaged in thinking about Krishna, the mind becomes spiritual. When one becomes engaged in devotional service constantly, then Krishna is saying that he gives him spiritual intelligence. So intelligence is transformed and spiritualized. And in this way, when one becomes engaged in serving Krishna, he becomes situated in his actual identity and his mistaken identity of false ego is dissolved. Gets a spiritual identity. So at that stage, he doesn't have a subtle body. His mind has become spiritualized, his intelligence has become spiritualized, his identity has become spiritualized. So that state is called Jivan Mukta stage. Iha yasya hare dasi karmana manasa gira Nikila Shabyavasthasu Jivan Mukta Samachari. Meaning, although he is in this gross material body, but he is liberated from this material body. It is also called Siddha Swarup, his perfect identity, spiritual identity. So the way to become free from the bondage of the subtle body is by being engaged in devotional service.
In fact, there is a verse in Bhagavad Gita I would like to say, that the one you were saying, Manmarāho madhvatto badhyādi māvnamastu māve vaishyasi vayyeva atak urdhva nasavtra.
Okay, we quoted that verse already.
That is
the
verse.
And can you please explain that?
Make yourself devoted to me to such an extent.
Okay, no, you are not giving the translation. Give the translation.
Well,
you say, we quoted the verse, you said that you are saying it.
Yes.
What is the meaning of man mana bhava?
Completely dwell your mind in me as a supreme being. And once you retain that state, you will no longer be separated from me because you will be me. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yes, what do you say? So I think we end it now. Yeah.
You talk about the body and soul. So it's like Mataji is speaking something. It's related to this, that mukti itto anata arupam sarupena bhavasti. When somebody is like realized that he is some spiritual identity. Yes. So in that stage, he is like worshipping Lord Krishna. He realized that he is like Yes, the point I need to
do. That's what I explained. Sarupena Vyavasthiti. Ananda Rupa, Sarupena Vyavasthiti. Become situated in one sarup, in one spiritual identity. That is the liberation. Mukti Vidya Ananda Rupa, Sarupena Vyavasthiti. Liberation means to become situated in one spiritual identity.
When he is living with his material body, he could realize.
Yes, that is called Jivan Mukta stage. Although he is in his material body, but in the pure spirit soul, and he doesn't have a subject. That is called Jivan Mukta stage or Sarup Siddhi. And then when he leaves the body, then he goes back to the spiritual world as well as the Siddhi. Yes.
Sometimes we see religious people go through a lot of suffering, but some of the atheist people, they don't want to know why the different stages.
Yes. You see, the suffering is subjected to the body, pertaining to the body. The body is subjected to the cardiac reactions. And the body is subjected to the natural law of nature. Birth, death, old age, and disease. So these are unavoidable factors of this material body. You cannot avoid them. Whoever is born is going to die. Well, eventually he will become old. And it is not that when one takes to spiritual life, his body is not affected by the laws of the material body. No, it does. But the point is, that when he becomes situated in his spiritual identity, he doesn't become affected by the happenings of the material world. Right? Like for example, if you identify yourself with your dress, then if something happens to your dress, you feel that that's happening to you. Similarly, as long as you identify ourselves with his body, when something happens to the body, we feel it's happening to me. Right? But when we transcend the bodily platform and become situated with the spiritual platform, then the happenings of the body doesn't affect us anymore. So the point is that spiritual personalities, even though they go through various material conditions, they do not become affected by that. Okay, thank you all very much. All glories.